present date is April 28, 1992. I would like to present to you Rabbi Chester Diamond of the Temple, who has consented to share his recollections with us today. Rabbi Diamond, would you please give us your name, address, and if you wish, your phone number?
I suppose part of this has to do with the fact that my dad's family, when I was born, my dad's mother and father moved to Israel so that they could die in the Holy Land. So I never knew them. That was back in 1936, approximately, they went. So that was, they were there for quite a lengthy time. They were about 65 or so. They were in that age category, but my grandmother died shortly thereafter. My grandfather lived another 20 years and we married. So he is buried on Harmon Court in the New City, because already things had changed, War of Independence and so on. But my grandmother's grave was one of the desecrated graves because she was buried on Harmon's in Queens, the mountain. Let me just give you a little bit about my background. I grew up in Brooklyn. First in an area that was near the old Ebbets Field. I was born on Lincoln Place, near Franklin Avenue. Lived for a short time on Eastern Parkway, between Bedford and Franklin, and that was at a Franklin Avenue train station where many of the ball players would come up and go on to Ebbets Field, a little bit further down. For 1 year, we moved to Boston. I lived there when I was 9 years old, and moved back to Brooklyn and moved to Crown Heights. I spent, my formative years in Crown Heights, on Crown Street near Utica Avenue, for those for whom those streets mean something. My family was not affiliated with any synagogue. As it was true of most of the people who I grew up with, people did not belong to synagogues, but all Jewish holidays, we were all off from school. Most of the schools that we attended, public schools, were predominantly Jewish. Teachers were predominantly Jewish. Students were predominantly Jewish. So on Jewish holidays, we were all off. And since there were synagogues practically out of the corner, as a child, I would wander in and out of synagogues. I didn't have any cheder. I never learned any Hebrew. Had no idea what was being said, but I kind of had an attraction. Would walk in, sit down. I remember when I was really young. It had to be pre-Bar Mitzvah, but when I think about the fact that they handed me the Torah, I'm wondering about that. But I'm sure it was. I feel as if I was no more than 10 years old. So I sat down in front, and I remember one of the men bringing the Torah and having me hold it, and you know, it was just a fun thing. Services were very informal. It was walk in, walk out, and so on. And since I didn't understand the Hebrew, and since my family was not there, they never went to the synagogue. Not for any reason, but the fact that my father was working from the time he was a teen, and simply was exhausted by day's end and was a window trimmer for a shoe company, and after he finished that job, he would take on freelance work, and he was always working. Always came back home exhausted, and mother was at home, and was a homemaker. I have an older sister who's 5 years older. Anyway, I had a lot of nice experiences. My dad took me to a cousin in the family who was an Orthodox rabbi when I was older, because he had never gotten me to the name. So he took me to Rabbi Shizgal. That's all I remember. Never saw him again. But one day we went to where he lived, with the idea that he was going to give me my Hebrew name. And he decided on a name which, at the time, I just remembered how it was pronounced, and of course it was pronounced with a a Yiddish accent, and I was told that I was Cyril, and that was the way it was pronounced, Cyril. I never knew what Cyril was, and people used to tell me, oh, his name is Cyril, because they didn't know either, and they thought that that was what he gave me. But I, later on, when I studied Hebrew, I figured out that my name was Tsuriel, which means God is my rock. It appears once in the entire Torah, in the third chapter of the book of Numbers. I looked it up, I found it, and it was really neat. And it's an unusual name. As a matter of fact, when I, just before I was married and had my Ofra, when I gave that name, it was in an Ashkenazic synagogue, and the Balkore asked me if I was Sephardic, because that probably was more likely that that would have been given as to a Sephardic Jewish, and a Sephardic Jewish family than rather than Ashkenazic. I'm Ashkenazic.
Well,
anyway, I'll just go on.
Please do, I'd just rather listen to you talk.
Continue my stream of consciousness. Go
of
on.
Course.
So I did get my Hebrew name. I was Tsuriel ben Zalman. Dad's name was Zalman. And I was at age 13, bar mitzvah. Now, since we didn't belong to a congregation, since I had no background or training, again they made use of someone who knew the family from England. Went to a rabbi who was a friend of the family. His name was Joseph Paymer, P-A-Y-M-E-R. He lived in Flatbush on a street known as Chester Court. Of course, my name being Chester, it stuck with me. He was a conservative rabbi, orthodox in practice, a graduate of the Jewish Institute of Religion, the school that was founded by Stephen Wise. Eventually that school merged with Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati and became Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion. But when Rabbi Paymer graduated in 1939, the same year as Dr. Herbert Wallace, Paymer from New York, Dr. Wallace from Cincinnati, his school was the one that Stephen Wise intended to produce rabbis for all branches of Judaism. That didn't quite work out, but Paymer went into the conservative rabbinate, a Brooklyn conservative, which was fairly orthodox in practice. And anyway, I went to his home regularly, weekly, for a lesson. And he taught me everything I needed to know for a conservative bar mitzvah in his shul by transliteration, because they only took me 6 months before my bar mitzvah without knowing any Hebrew. So he taught me all of it. He taught me how to chant, and then taught me my muftar, the whole thing, in transliteration. And I did a lovely little soprano voice, and I did my whole bar mitzvah without knowing a word of Hebrew. And I had a wonderful experience. I would never do this again. I would insist that a child have, you know, the proper education and celebrate the things that indicated that he had done all of the knowledge and so on and so forth. But I always have in the back of my mind the fact that there's an emotional side to all of this. That it's not just a quantity of information that you require. There was an impact on my life that I absolutely adored and loved. And although the only people in that synagogue on the day of my bar mitzvah were my parents, my sister, my grandparents, my mother's parents, that's all. The only people we knew. And we went home, and my mother invited the family over to the house, and she had brought some cold cuts in, and we had, that was my party. I don't remember really any presents other than a little pearlized Bible that my grandmother and grandfather Fanny and Simon Blumenson gave to me. So those were my recollection of Bar Mitzvah. And then went all the way through my education, secular education, and through Brooklyn College, without really knowing what I was going to do with my life. There was a point at which as opposed to most of it. So many of the students going to Brooklyn College were pre-med. I was pre-med with everybody else. And 75% of them may have changed after, but we all started out pre-med. And I was joined the ROTC. I was in that program when I had considered a career in the Air Force, as a matter of fact, at one point. I had considered a career in biology, in microbiology. As a matter of fact, I was switched in between with possibly going to graduate school at Kansas State University for an advanced degree in microbiology, and went into the Air Force for a short period. I was in a non-flying status, although I had started out in order to get into the advanced program of the ROTC, had to qualify for a flying status, so my eyes weren't good enough in the final analysis, and so they gave me a non-flying position. And because of some quirk in regulations, wound up being one of five people in the entire country who were in a category that only had to, that were commissioned, and yet only had to stay in the Air Force for 6 months of active duty. that was a kind of an odd thing. But it was when I went into the Air Force and met the chaplain, who was graduated from Sheehan University, and found that I took an interest in discovering what my Jewishness was all about. College graduate, I didn't really know anything other than my very positive feelings about Judaism. I knew I was Jewish. I believed in God. Our family always went to someone in the family to Pesach. But no synagogue, regular synagogue participation. I remember the day I found that my grandparents, my mother's parents, fasted on Yom Kippur. Even pre-bar mitzvah, I began to fast on Yom Kippur just because I kind of, I wanted to do what they were doing. And all of those memories, holding the Torah, when I would go into shul, they would let me hold the Torah, getting a Hebrew name, having a bar mitzvah, knowing that my grandparents died in Israel. I went to Israel to die. That's mostly the way I spent my off time. I finally, to make a long story short, came to the conclusion that I wanted to be a rabbi. But at that time, I didn't know what that entailed. Nor did I know the difference between Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox. Those things were just not part of my education. And I just felt that what I was discovering about my faith, about my religion, it just made a tremendous impact on me. Let me just back up a little bit. I began the search in part because I remember that I think it may have been the synagogue in Atlanta, driving the stage, that incident of the synagogue bomb being bombed. And I think that was the one, but I remember the synagogues, I read in the paper, synagogue and bomb. And then the whole Holocaust tragedy. I began to wonder, what is it about me that makes me a hate object? What is it that would cause these things, these horrible, horrible things to happen to the Jewish people? I wanted to know whether it was worth it, whether it was worth being what I was. And so in the process of discovering and reading, I not only found that it was worth it, but it was something that touched me with such a tremendous feeling of pride. Such a feeling that what I had discovered, that the world ought to know about, everyone ought to know, and I thought that there were so many people who grew up just like me without any education, without any Jewish education. And I wanted to impart these wonderful things that so enhanced my life and gave me, it was like I discovered a whole other part of my life that I didn't know about. And so I didn't know what else to do but to go back to Rabbi Tamer, who was the only person I really knew, to find out what course I should take. I got leave. I went back and I talked to him. And he recommended that I see someone at the Jewish Institute of Religion, which had already merged in 1950 with the Hebrew College, and I spoke to the dean, and they sent me to an intensive Hebrew training camp in Towanda, New York. Excuse me, Towanda, Pennsylvania. It was near Elmira, New York. Spent 6 weeks studying Hebrew, night and day. 6 days a week. Shabbos was the only day we had off. Got to the point where we started dreaming in Hebrew. I had applied prior to that. I applied for college. I was interviewed. And although I had no background, they were willing to take a chance on me. You know, I felt very fortunate.
Your enthusiasm, obviously. was shining bright.
Well, and I went to a couple of night classes at the college, School of Education, took a course in ancient Jewish history, medieval Jewish history, with Avi Zuckerman, who was a professor at City College, Jewish scholar, and also with Samuel J.D. Wolk, who taught me Jewish customs and ceremonies, my first opening of that whole world of Jewish customs and stuff. And to make a long story short, I was accepted into this college in 1958, I think it was, and went through and graduated and wound up in Louisville. That's another story.
No, that's
how I got to Louisville.
How did you get to Louisville?
Well, on graduating, decided that as I was approaching graduation, working on my thesis, decided that I wanted to, I decided against a pulpit, decided against the active rabbinate. I wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to be a professor. I had a student for a pulpit, but I felt that I wanted to teach. I wanted to get a further higher degree. And so I won a fellowship at Hebrew Union College to study for a doctorate in Bible and Semitic languages. And unfortunately, I got my acceptance. I say unfortunately because the first paragraph of the letter said, "We are so happy to congratulate you on that the board of the college has awarded you a fellowship to study for your doctorate. However, at the present time, we don't have sufficient funds to give you so that you can have the fellowship." Meanwhile, so I was kind of up on cloud nine with paragraph one and down in the dumps after paragraph two, and found eventually I received a call from Rabbi Haskell Burnett. Rabbi Burnett was an assistant rabbi in Louisville with Dr. Waller. Dr. Waller had been having assistants come who were graduate students at Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, commuted from the college to Louisville on weekends and would assist Dr. Waller on weekends. Rabbi Martin Cohen, I think, may have been the first. And then he went back and became a professor at the New York School of Hebrew Union College teaching history. Rabbi Stephen Passamanic, who has family here in Louisville, he went on to become a professor at the California School. And he assisted Dr. Waller, and then Rabbi Burnett came, and Haskell, who was the first student I met at college. It's an interesting thing. That first day that I was being interviewed, I was so nervous, and he saw me pacing the floor, waiting for my turn, And he came over, put his arm around me, and he said, "You're going to do just right." He kind of eased my nerves. And so we were friends ever since. Anyway, Haskell called me and he said, "Look, Chet, I think I've decided to take a pulpit. I was going for my doctorate, but I've got that in my heart, and I want a congregation. I knew that you were looking to come here, but couldn't get the funding. Perhaps when I leave, that will open up another fellowship room. And I want you to, they are interviewing here in Louisville for a position of part-time assistant." And obviously I knew I was going to need a job. I was married, wife was pregnant, and I knew that the fellowship money wouldn't be sufficient. And so and other students were already interviewing for this position. So Haskell made arrangements for me to fly down and be interviewed here for the position to assist Dr. Wallace. I always remember Dr. Wallen meeting me at the airport, standing in the field, going to the interview and being interviewed that time.
What year again was this?
I graduated in 1963, in June of 1963. I did get the position here. I got the scholarship to go to Cincinnati, got the position here, and came here as a part-time assistant to work with, primarily to work with the youth group to train the name of, at that time, it was, I don't think it was the girls at that time, maybe while I was here, then maybe we had our first, the girls, and to work with the religious, do the religious, you know, run the religious school pretty much. And I would do that on weekends, and during the week I would go back to Cincinnati and work to my graduate study work. Again, trying to make this, shorten the story a little bit, I had such a great experience here at this congregation. I mean, I fell in love with the community, I fell in love with the community, I fell in love with Dr. Wall was just magnificent.
So this was your one and only.
This is my only. I never grew up with a congregation. I feel that this is my congregation from childhood almost.
Absolutely.
I was 27 years old when I came, and in 1993 I'll be celebrating my 30th year.
Isn't this a very unique experience?
It
just
is.
To be
most,
one
most,
place.
Yeah, most of my friends have been four or five congregations. You know, you look to find your niche. I did not come here planning to stay. I came here only because I needed an additional work in order to support my family while I was doing the graduate study. But when Dr. Sandmill, who was the provost at the school, asked me to take a full-time position teaching and to continue and finish my doctoral work, at that point, I had decided that I wanted my own book. And when I told that to Dr. Waller, and he told it to the board, they decided that they would make what was a part-time position, a full-time position, in the hopes that I might stay. And I couldn't, you know, this congregation is so great, Temple Out of Israel, Third Street. For those who recall that terminology, it was just very, very exciting for me, and we did stay, and eventually I was that was 1966, I became full-time assistant rabbi. In 1969, I became associate rabbi. And in 1975, I was elected co-rabbi with Dr. Wallace. Then in 1976, the congregations merged, Temple Out of Israel and Temple of Shalom. And Rabbi Devine became co-rabbi. He was probably the only three co-rabbis in the country. And then in 1986, Dr. Waller became emeritus in 1980. In 1986, Rabbi Devine became emeritus, and I became senior rabbi. So I suppose I've occupied every conceivable part-time assistant, associate, a co with one other, co with two others, and senior rabbi. And that's why I have this little sculpture sitting on my desk, which was given to me by the staff of the congregation, and it says, it shows a rabbi reading from a lectern, and it says, "You mean I'm not the youngest rabbi anymore?" And the date is July 1st, 1986. It says, "Chester Diamond, senior rabbi." So I've had a wonderful time here. Let me say a word about this community, because there are a combination of things that make you want to see. You can't always get to do what you want, be where you want. But I fell in love with Lourdes. The Jewish community in Louisville welcomed me with open arms. It was incredible. I mean, I came from New York I wasn't used to that sense of community. New York was just too big, and the Orthodox community had nothing to do with the conservative community, which had nothing to do with the Reform community. I mean, there were different worlds, and each world was so huge. So, I mean, your congregation, I was ordained at Temple Emmanuel in New York. I mean, this was a huge, just that one congregation. The membership was a Union Temple in Brooklyn, where I had attended services. I assisted Rabbi Klein when I was a student at Stephen Weiss Free Synagogue. These were all major congregations and sizes were tremendous. I mean, the numbers of people. Anyway, this sense of community, being invited to give a lecture series at the Jewish Community Center, where people from all the congregations had an opportunity to participate, and I got to meet them. Being invited to Addis Yeshurun to be a speaker and meet the people at that congregation. Having opportunities to sit with Rabbi Rubin and to talk and to share. These things were just unbelievable to me. People were Jews in Louisville without adjective. Now, what I mean is, there was a sense of unity, a sense of community. There was a warmth, there was a welcoming. I know that the people living here felt their congregational allegiances and so on and so forth. But as a stranger, as a newcomer, I really felt that tight sense of community and sharing that went beyond congregational TERFs, as they use that terminology today. People were just, I adored everyone I met. People would invite me to their home. It was just great. My son was born here. I was actually born in Cincinnati, but grew up here. And we just were, my wife and son and I were just welcome. I remember our first Seder, he was only 3 months. We had a communal Seder, and we brought him in his little baby buggy. And even then, he was competing with me. So those things were just wonderful. I found another thing, too, and that was the non-Jewish community. It was an incredible community. The groundwork that had been laid in terms of interfaith relations, and I attribute so much of this to Dr. Waller. I know that his predecessors obviously all participated, and I've heard a lot about Dr. Rao, especially the tremendous work that they did. But for me, I got to see Dr. Waller in action. And And I learned so much from him. Matter of fact, I didn't learn anything in school. I learned books. Dr. Waller taught me how to be a rabbi. This community taught me how to be a rabbi. There are things that I can't really express properly. But for the fact that both the world, the Jewish world, and the non-Jewish world of Louisville, in a sense, beckoned to me. Because I found I was able to learn about other faiths. I was invited to do so many different things with other congregations, church groups, schools, parochial schools, whatever it was. The ministers, I mean, I remember meeting the bishop of the Episcopal Church, Bishop Gresham Marmion. From the moment I met him, he said it was Gresh, and I was Chet. There was this warmth of discovery for me. It made me feel that, I suppose from the start, that this is where I had to be. And I think people here, if they only knew how fortunate they were, the groundwork, like we were so far advanced when it comes to matters of interfaith relations, we take it for granted. But I remember some years ago, the publicity that Temple Emmanuel received in New York, because their rabbi exchanged pulpit with the archbishop who was at St. Patrick's Cathedral. And it was, late 70s, I suppose, that happened, or thereabouts. 78, 79, somewhere, mostly, that event took place. And it received national publicity. Oh, we got from the Jewish Post and all of these, the information about that. In 1973, something happened here that probably never happened in history before. We didn't make too much of a to-do about it. Probably no one else in the country knew about it. But we probably had something here that has never happened before or since. And that was when the country, in 1973, left Vietnam. We kind of moved out of that responsibility. Our soldiers, our troops came home. Archbishop McDonough of the Catholic Archdiocese sat together with religious leaders of the community and indicated that there ought to be a service of thanksgiving for having concluded that Vietnam horror. And he said the service, if it's a community service, it ought to take place at the temple, at Temple Mount of Israel at the time. He felt that that was the only way to properly have a proper interfaith community service. And he got every leader, not just representatives of churches, the bishop of the Episcopal Church, the bishop of the Methodist Church, the head of the Baptist Theological Seminary, of Spalding College, of the Eastern Orthodox priest, who was the highest ranking member of that, and he was Lebanese, as a matter of fact. I remember the names of these people, too. I mean, it's just so. We had on our bima every leader from the Archbishop of the Roman Catholic Church to the head of every denomination locally, Presbyterian, Methodist, Episcopalian, United Church of Christ, black churches, white churches, whatever. And they were all together on one pulpit. And we walked out into that congregation that seated 1,000 people on the ground floor alone, and they all came to their feet. I mean, it was overwhelming. You talk about interfaith. This was not done for interfaith. This was not an interfaith service in the sense that it was done because it was Brotherhood Week. It was a natural result of relationships that had been so established in this community that it was the only appropriate thing in this community to do, to put all of us together and for it to be at the temple and the Archbishop deliver the address and prepare the service. And everything was completely appropriate for the temple. It was a true interfaith experience, the likes of which ought to go down in history. And that's the kind of thing that this community is capable of. And those are the kind, I mean, I have learned so much about not only my own faith, from sharing with the rabbis and the community, Jewish community, but so much about the non-Jewish faith. We formed a board of rabbis. Dr. Waller took the leadership in that. We decided that there were issues that we could help each other with. This was still in the 60s. Rabbi Gittleman was still living. I remember he used to sit with, I had so much fun with Rabbi Gittleman and Caterpillar. We realized that there were things that we could be more effective in contributing in areas of education. So many things that didn't have anything to do with our philosophical differences, that we could be supportive of each other, that we needed to meet on a regular basis. And we were originally the Kentucky Board of Rabbis, invited all the other rabbis from Kentucky areas, from Lexington, Paducah. Of course, Paducah never was able to come. The Lexington rabbis came, but they found that we discussed mostly rural issues, so they stopped coming. And we became officially the Louisville Board of Rabbis. But it was wonderful. One of the reasons I wanted to stay here was because of people like Rabbi Kling, because of people like Dr. Waller, because of people like Rabbi Rubin, because of people like Rabbi Gittleman. That you have no idea what it meant to a young rabbi to be able to sit with people of that caliber. And to grow. I mean, when Rabbi Kling came here, I was already here. And we formed an immediate bond. And we studied on a regular basis. The Tuesday, we would meet, study, have lunch. And I can't tell you, I mean, my feelings for people like that, like Rabbi Kling. What a wonderful rabbi, what a wonderful teacher. And I was able to go to him when I had things that I needed his advice on. And I could sit with Dr. Waller, and it was great not being the the person where the buck stops there, because the buck stopped with him. And I could always, I mean, things would come up, and I wasn't sure of something, I could always run it by him, get his advice, and his advice was always the best, always impeccable. He always, somehow, I never understood how it would be possible for me to ever be in a situation where I would know just the right thing to say, just the right thing to do, and I would get that kind of help from him. Like I say, he taught me, he really taught me, because he was my mentor. He is my mentor, he continues to be my mentor. I still go to him for advice and his wisdom, and it's just great. And Rabbi Kling, Oliver Sholem, you know, I miss him so much. The time that we could sit and study. And then the time that Rabbi Kling and Rabbi Rubin and myself, we went to Israel together on a mission. It was incredible. I could just go on and on. And I really appreciate your inviting me to share some of these thoughts. There's so much about this community that I fell in love with there, that I still love and still feel that we have so many things that we can still accomplish and do, and it just continues to go on, and I think I'm as enthusiastic and as excited about where I am today as I was when I started. trying to say all the things that I have and remember all the people. Obviously, people get left out, and it occurred to me that I never mentioned Rabbi Perley, I never mentioned Rabbi Devine, and when I came here, I mean, Rabbi Perley got me lost in Seneca Park, and I never thought I'd find my way out. He said it was so simple to do, and I thought, once I finish with that, he was so great. We had youth group conclaves and so on. That's when I first, our sister congregations with Temple Beth Sholem. I learned to say that properly from New York to Beth Sholem, with the proper accent, Kentucky nuance of accent, instead of Beth Shalom. Ah, see that? and Rabbi Perley, of course, was at Beth Sholem at the time, and we also became famous friends, and I swore that I would never go into Seneca Park again, or Cherokee, or whatever. They were all combined. It was one mass of streets that I never understood how to get in and out of. But then, I remember Rabbi Perley took a position, left the pulpit, his active pulpit, took a position as director of the Human Relations Council, City County Human Relations Council, and Rabbi Devine, who had been in Chicago, came to Louisville. What a wonderful person he is. I mean, a pastor of the highest order, of a man of compassion and sweet. And we would sit and talk. And I remember sitting and talking with him about the idea of merging our congregation. And the whole history of moving our congregation, you know, congregations moved, I suppose in the 50s is when they moved to the suburbs, but Temple Out of Israel didn't move right away, and it was important to have a Jewish presence downtown. I always felt that, but there were things, there was a demography, there were things that indicated to me that there was a need to put this congregation back where the people were, where they were actually living. You know, when Out of Israel was on 6th Street, 6th and Broadway. When it moved to 3rd and York, the comment that was made in the minutes, in the notes, was that they needed to be where the people were living at the time. So they made a move from 6th and Broadway to, of course, there was some, I think there was a fire or something that took place at the 6th and Broadway location also that probably influenced that. But they moved to 3rd and York because that's where people were living. And there had been other times when there was a feeling that the temple needed to move to the Highlands at one point. There were those who favored that. But to make a long story, of moving was something that I would say at least half the congregation started to feel that was the case, but another half did not want to move, and so there was a lot going on there. At a certain point, I felt very strongly that the move needed to take place, and began working on it to try to mobilize people and help them to realize that most people coming from other communities were used to their congregation being in the suburban area where they live. And a lot of people, you know, being downtown was great, and we all had a lot of emotional attachments to it, to the downtown location and building and so on. But certain programming we couldn't do. I mean, we couldn't have a preschool. And you want children to begin to identify with their temple from their earliest ages. And that was very important. We could have a Boy Scout troop, but it wouldn't be our kids, because you wouldn't have people from the East End going downtown for a Boy Scout meeting. I mean, the people in that area might. Programming. People who were single, women especially, did not want to come downtown at night to program. We had things we called shul-in. Shul-in was what they called to this day lock-in for youth groupers. Well, I had to call the police and be sure that we had security, and families didn't want to have their kids spend the night in the congregation. I would walk into the congregation one morning and some derelict had been hiding in the women's room, the ladies' room, and I was working with a student, and this person pops up out of the clear blue, we have to keep our doors locked because of security problems. There were so many matters of that nature that it really became impossible to do the kinds of things we wanted to do programming-wise and in many other respects. People would come to the temple only if they had an occasion. It wasn't in your neighborhood, and it needed to be in the neighborhood. And at the same time, I also felt that the efforts, that we could mobilize efforts of the two Reformed congregations. I didn't think that a community the size of Louisville needed really to have two separate Reformed congregations. And I suppose it really came to me when I realized that Temple Bristol was planning on moving because where they were on Cowling Avenue, the parking lot was insufficient. They were a growing congregation, and they had no—they couldn't put all the people where, I mean, it was impossible. And I knew that they wanted to move, and the cost of building a new temple, I mean, were extravagant. And I thought to myself, here we are, we want to move, they want to move. Why should we expend those kinds of money to have two separate buildings when we can we can join forces, have one strong congregation, a center for Reformed Judaism in this community? And so that was the beginning of really serious talks with Rabbi Devine, and that's when I really got to know him and find out what a delightful person he was and what a wonderful pastor. I say pastor because he has those special qualities. You know, we all have different qualities, and those were his qualities. The qualities that caused his daughter, when we were honoring him on his 70th birthday, to say that he spent so much time at the hospital that the doctors would ask him for a second opinion. But that's the kind of person Rabbi Devine is. And I just, again, I feel so fortunate. Rabbi Perley, Rabbi Devine, Rabbi Wallace, Rabbi Gilman, just it goes on and on. Rabbi Glickman and Rabbi Rudman and now Rabbi Brooks and Lepore. What a great place this is. What a wonderful community, and how fortunate we are. Rabbi Schlossberg and Rabbi Miles. And when we merged, so a group broke off and became another congregation. So we merged so that there would be one congregation. And we still have two. It's beautiful. It's beautiful because of the way we relate to each other. I attended a General Assembly meeting of the Federation, national meeting, and communities were discussing their problems with relating to the congregations and attitudes, and Jewish centers and relating to the congregations. And I said, we don't have those problems anymore. Because the people who sit on the Federation Board and the people who sit on the board of the Jewish Family Vocational Service and the people who sit on the board of the Jewish Community Center and the people who sit on the Congregational Board, we're all the same people. We all have the same goals and the same enthusiasm about our community. And we are not, it's not a we-they situation where we need to deal with the issues that they have to deal with in New York or Chicago or St. Louis or wherever. We are beyond that. And I always felt that this community is beyond what so many other communities. We are, other communities could go to school on the way we handle things here, how we merge congregations, and how much we learned from how that was done. It was done in a beautiful way. What it takes to build a congregation, a new building, and all of those things, and that was so exciting for me. Actually being able to be there from the ground floor and have some input into the things that we look forward to, that made this building is more than just a building. Anyway, I could go on and on about how much I love this community and how great it is, and I feel very, very fortunate that I have spent my entire rabbinate here in Louisville.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Down. You have been wonderful. I wish we could go on longer, too. And we're very, very lucky to have you here with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.